Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the ongoing Altus Group podcast series, where we cover a wide range of strategies for minimizing your sales and use tax exposure through various regions throughout the U.S. Today, we're speaking with Brandon Hayes. He's the Texas Sales and Use Tax Practice Leader at Altus Group about the state of Texas and much more. And Brandon, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Matt. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us. And as we mentioned at the top of this podcast, Altus Group's transaction tax practice is now doing this podcast series on sales and use tax audits, covering various regions throughout the country. Tell us about why you've chosen to focus on Texas.
Sure. Well, you know, it's no secret that Texas is a major player by any metric, really. I mean, according to the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis, Texas's GDP is over $1.65 trillion. And when this economy produces $46 billion in both sales and various gross receipts tax revenue annually. And additionally, over 10% of the Fortune 500 companies are headquartered here. So Texas is also blessed with a very diverse economy, you know, includes manufacturing, oil and gas, high tech, telecom, healthcare, hospitality, among some others. So, you know, with an economy that large, it may seem like Texas has plenty of ways to generate tax revenue, but because Texas doesn't impose a personal income tax, it relies very heavily on sales and use tax collections in order to meet the state spending obligations. You know, in fact, Texas sales and use tax collections account for approximately 58% of the state's overall revenue. You know, and as such, the comptroller's office wants to make sure that they get every dollar that's due.
That's great. Great insights there, Brandon. So tell us, like, how significant of an issue can sales and use tax really be for the average business then?
Well, I mean, like a lot of issues in business, you know, it's really not a problem until it becomes one. Sales and use tax audits can be particularly burdensome for small to mid-sized businesses that may not have large tax departments to be able to handle them. You know, over the course of my career, I've seen companies become severely impaired or even forced to liquidate because of a sales and use tax liability. You know, the state will generally work with folks, but the amount of time, effort, and lost revenue that's required to satisfy that debt can be crippling. You know, it's especially true for growing businesses that may be tight on cash or internal resources. You know, and when you think about all the variables that can influence a sales and use tax audit, you know, it's pretty easy to see, you know, how these things can become unwieldy pretty quickly. Audit periods in Texas can span up to 4 years. They involve a review of both the company's sales and their purchases. Changes in laws, regulations, personnel turnover, computer system changes, data migrations, the digitization of invoices and supporting documentation, you know, are just some of the variables that have a significant impact on the results of an audit. Just the sheer amount of documentation required to get through an audit can be overwhelming for most companies, irrespective of their size.
Interesting. Now, with all the various software options available on the market today, why are sales and use tax audits even necessary? You know, when looking at my own receipts, it looks like sales tax is being calculated correctly. So why isn't this true for businesses?
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, from a consumer's perspective, sales and use tax is deceptively simple. But, you know, for a multi-state company that's facing 45 states and the District of Columbia, you know, differing tax laws, exemptions, interpretations, you know, these things can get complicated pretty quickly. You know, just take the issue of interpretation as one example. The comptroller is given quite a bit of latitude to interpret regulations as long as those interpretations, you know, aren't more restrictive than the law itself. And so what makes matters worse is that interpretations in the law can vary from auditor to auditor. So as a result, you know, companies routinely make adjustments to their systems after the conclusion of one audit, only to have the next auditor make a different interpretation regarding the same or similar transactions in the next cycle. You know, and even with software being as robust as it is today, there's no way that a package can capture all the little nuances that go into making taxability decisions. You know, and most companies we talk to recognize that the only way to be 100% compliant is to pay tax on everything. And while companies want to be good corporate citizens and pay their fair share, no one wants to have to pay more than what's legally due. You know, and so as a result, you know, sometimes things fall through the cracks, and state auditors know that, and so every 3 to 4 years they come to clean up the leakage.
So you mentioned in there that there are some determinations that are open to interpretation by state auditors, if you will. Can you give us some more examples of situations where that might be common, and how can companies mitigate those situations?
Sure. So two of the more common scenarios that I see when I'm assisting companies with audit defense are related to both software and construction. Now, Texas allows an apportionment exemption for software that's used by a company across state lines. Now, the law will allow a taxpayer to use any means which are supported by the books and records of that business to determine how much of the cost of that software should be allocated to Texas versus the other states. Now, again, that might sound pretty simple, but you know, there's a different section of the same law that essentially states that if an allocation cannot be validated, it's presumed that that software is going to be used for the general business and is taxed at the business's primary location. So, I mean, just think about, you know, how that might affect a company with multiple locations across the U.S., but they're headquartered in Texas. So, you know, I guess as an example, let's assume that a company has, I don't know, 20 states, including Texas, and they allocate the cost of software evenly across all 20 locations. Then let's also assume that under audit, an auditor believes that that allocation should be by user licenses, or an allocation by user license would be more appropriate, and it just so happens that 50% of those licenses reside in the state of Texas. Well, you know, looking at either approach, they can both be supported by the books and records of that business. But now the issue is which approach is more correct. You know, and I'm sure you can guess which method that the auditor is going to prefer. You know, so really the best way to mitigate scrutiny is to kind of think like an auditor. And we work really closely with our clients to ensure that, you know, the allocation utilized takes all the variables into account that an auditor may consider, such as the number of users by state, the degree of accessibility by various users, the reporting capabilities of that software and who uses them, the benefit of the use, among some other things. But so really just asking the right questions and providing a degree of thoughtful granularity into the calculation method makes it difficult for an auditor to assert that whatever allocation method is decided on isn't valid. You know, and another common issue that I see in virtually every audit has to do with new construction. Now, Texas makes a distinction between non-taxable new construction and taxable remodeling of real property. Now, this creates an issue whenever a company chooses to expand its facilities, whether it's production, warehousing space, office space, it doesn't really matter. You know, and in those instances, you know, when a company decides to add on to an existing building, you know, inherently they've got both remodeling and new construction going on at the same time. You know, if the contractors aren't really specific about which portions of that job are related to remodeling of an existing building or construction of a new usable footage, the auditor will try to protect the state's interest by asserting that a disproportionate percentage of that cost is related to a taxable remodeling job as opposed to non-taxable new construction. You know, and attempting to disprove an auditor's assertion can be both, you know, costly and time-consuming. Well, I can think of, you know, one example that I had that dealt with the expansion of a frozen food manufacturing facility. And in that case, the auditor asserted that the entire project was taxable remodel because the company reconfigured an existing warehouse into a manufacturing facility. But, you know, after digging in, we found that the auditor had grossly overestimated the liability by not taking into account the new usable footage that was created whenever they built a new mezzanine level for the offices inside of the building, and also did not take into account the new usable footage from, or new cubic footage from cutting away and reconfiguring the floor into manufacturing space. You know, as a result of our analysis, we were able to prevent tens of thousands of dollars from being erroneously assessed by the auditor.
Wow. You know, it certainly sounds like despite one's best efforts, sales and use tax audits can be pretty unpredictable. So are there ways to make the outcomes more predictable and perhaps even less painful?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, actually there are. You know, if you think about or think that you may have a significant liability that needs to be addressed, you may want to consider participating in the Texas Managed Audit Program. Now, this program allows for certain taxpayers to conduct an audit on their own with the guidance and supervision of the comptroller. And assuming that the taxpayer meets the criteria for the program, I mean, this can be a great way to manage the audit. It allows taxpayers to maintain control of the pace of the audit. And another attractive feature is that the comptroller will waive the penalties and interest as compensation for taking on the additional burden. You know, needless to say, that alone can be a huge benefit for the company. And another tool that I'll mention is an effective rate agreement or a managed compliance agreement. Now, these agreements can be very beneficial for the companies whose purchasing habits can be somewhat unpredictable. You know, so for example, let's assume that your company has a handful of vendors who supply, you know, a wide variety of products. You know, at the time of purchase, the company may not be able to ascertain whether or not those items will be used in a taxable manner. Well, as a result, one of two things typically happens. Either the company pays tax on everything and takes a credit or files a refund on the exempt purchases, or they pay tax on nothing and then have to review and accrue use tax on the taxable purchases. Well, either way, I mean, that process is going to be monotonous, time-consuming, and it's an open invitation for error. So in an alternative approach could be to enter into an effective rate agreement with the comptroller. Now, under this agreement, the taxpayer and the comptroller determine an acceptable percentage of taxable purchases as compared to all purchases. And then once executed, the taxpayer will calculate the same taxable percentage on all invoices and remit that amount to the comptroller. Now, these agreements are usually set for a period of time. It's typically 3 years. You know, and that can be a huge benefit for the taxpayer by allowing more predictability, reduced compliance costs, and allows their employees to focus on higher value tasks or projects for the organization. You know, and in the end, you know, if a taxpayer hasn't taken advantage of these opportunities, then really the best thing to do is to get a professional involved at the outset of or outside of an audit. You know, too many times we see audits that have gone off the rails whenever taxpayers try to handle them themselves. And by the time we get called in to assist, I mean, things have gotten to be pretty painful and, you know, a lot of time and has been spent in potential assessment has already been asserted. So getting a professional involved up front may seem like it's added cost, but really it ends up saving money in the long run.
That's perfect. You know, Brandon, what a great way to end this podcast interview. And for all of our listeners, you just heard our second in our exclusive Altus Group podcast series, where we cover a wide range of strategies for minimizing your sales and use tax exposure throughout the U.S. And Brandon Hayes, the Texas sales and use practice tax practice leader at Altus Group, was kind enough to share his really deep insights on what's going on in the state of Texas. And Brandon, as always, thanks for your time today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure, Matt.